My name is Leander Tomaselli. I'm from Adventist Risk Management. That's the company I work for. How many of you know what we do for the church? How many of you are not quite sure? Good. I like honesty. Good, good, good. We are the insurance company for the church. So not only from an insurance standpoint where we cover the liability claims, or the property insurance claims, the auto insurance claims, or maybe you go on a missionary trip, a mission trip, and you want to get short-term travel insurance. You get it, you can get it through us on our website. So we do all the insurance stuff for the church. And we actually have a video prepared to introduce what we are and what we do for the church. It's very short. So we are pretty much the insurance company for the church, right? And it all started when the church decided to put some funds together. It was about $25,000 about 80 years ago, 1936. And after that, we kept growing, and we now insure over about $16 billion in assets. So worldwide. So that's the only reason why we exist is to serve the church. So we call ourselves, we're titled a captive insurance company, which is an insurance company with a specific purpose just to insure our clients. So let's say if the Baptist church wants insurance and they ask me, Leander, can you provide me with a quote? I say, no, sorry, I only work for the church. And that's what we do. So, and as a conference, you have the option of going outside to get insurance elsewhere, but we only exist to really serve the church. So if all the conferences decide to get insurance elsewhere, they can, and we would close our business. Because that's what we do. We just serve the church. And by doing that, we create policies that are customized to better serve the church. We understand the church like anyone else because we are the church. And so the policies reflect that. And we're going to talk about risk management for churches and schools. And before I go further, I'm an account executive. Nancy Sormack is the customer service rep. How many of you know what a certificate of insurance is? Familiar with that term? That's what you do when you need, when you're renting, you want to use the state's gymnasium, and they require you to provide a certificate of insurance showing liability insurance. So you request that through the conference. The conference fills out a form. The form gets submitted to Nancy, and Nancy issues your certificate of insurance. We call it COI, certificate of insurance. So that's our team. That's your team available to you. If you have questions, if you have trouble, you feel free to call me. You have my phone number. You have my cell phone. So, like I said, we don't see ourselves as a business so much. We are a ministry. We are here to be a supporting mechanism to the conferences, to the local churches, so that you can do your ministry without any concerns, without having to think too much about insurance. We want to make sure that you are properly insured, so that you can do your ministry freely. That's a good question. So what you get is a declaration of benefits. Like, it's a summary of the policy. The legal authority of all the properties, of all the churches and schools, is the conference. So the conference is the policy holder. So the policy stays at the conference. And then what you get as a church leadership, you get a statement of values, which shows your building values, your content values, your square footage, your titles, all of the information that you need to operate But when it comes to insurance and the policies, the policy stays in the conference. Yeah, and the conference can send you a summary of benefits, can send you a lot of information, but that's the way we are structured. Who, Mitch? Edie Ellis is your contact person for liability questions. And then Wendy Welch is your person for property related questions. And then, so let's say if you have a question about billing, about property insurance billing, you go to Wendy Welch and she can investigate or find out what your what the situation is for you. And the process, I just want to reemphasize the process of filing a claim. Just like you said, you get a form from Michigan Conference, you fill out that form, send it back to Michigan Conference, they submit it to us. What we do when we get that form, we assign an adjuster. An adjuster comes out to your property and we'll look at the damages that were done, let's say, by hail. Once the adjuster sees the damages, that adjuster writes up a report. That report will give us what we need to process payments. Yeah? Fair enough? So that's what we mean by risk financing. That's the insurance portion of the operation. We come in and we make payments to make your property whole again. All right? Now, there are other two parts of our ministry, which is called risk control and the risk identification. They kind of go hand in hand because once you identify the risk, you want to control the risk. You want to create a prevention plan that will allow you to minimize the potentials of an accident taking place. For example, Let's see. Trying to see if there's a risk here. You go into a church and then you see cords laying on the floor. All right? That is a risk. Slips, trips, and falls are the most common claim that we get from across the entire division. So by just simply removing the cords from that place, you're going to potentially prevent an injury from taking place. That's an example of identifying the risk. You walk into a room and say, okay, this cord, someone may trip and fall because of this. So you find ways as a safety officer or as a safety person or a leader at the church to prevent that or create a prevention plan. So that applies, and we're going to give you a lot of examples later on as to what things that you can do at the church property on site. Yes?
We've got two risk management here right now.
Oh, yeah?
If you look at the doors.
No emergency signs?
That's right.
That's exactly right. I remember you from last year. We talked about this last year. Yeah, now I'm connecting the faces. Yeah. See, that's something else. You're right. Yeah. That's the kind of mindset we need to have when we go into our churches. Especially if you are an assigned safety officer, that's the mentality that I recommend you having. You go into a place and see, well, this activity, there's not enough supervisors here. We have 20 kids running around, just one teacher. We need more people here. So you take that into your leadership and start making recommendations so you can, you know, improve your quality of your church and of your programs. So that's what the ministry is all about. So identify, control, creating prevention methods, minimize and avoid risks. And then the risk financing, when you actually have an accident and that risk is transferred over to the insurance company. Okay? So the risk management for safety officers are people who are in charge of helping the churches with safety. In 2018, the NED Risk Management Committee voted the 2018 NED Risk Management Initiatives. They are the following. The Risk Management Committees, having a Risk Management Committee at the conference and at the church level. Pastoral Risk Management Awareness and Education. We are committed to provide resources to the pastoral staff so they can have more understanding of the risk management initiatives and the things that the pastor can do to minimize and prevent risks. Compliance with inspections and surveys, emergency planning, when we talk about the safety Sabbath and all that, the conversations like the active shooter drills, the fire drills, and practicing those drills at the church is what we're trying to accomplish. And preparing for International Camp Re 2019, we want to make sure that we're going to be ready from an insurance and liability standpoint, that we have to do everything that we need to do to make sure we're safe for the Camp Re 2019 Oshkosh. All right, so those are the initiatives. Let's talk about those. Now, I don't want to bore you with this presentation, so I want this to be a conversation. So raise your hand, provide your comment, let's talk. Yes.
We've got several people that can climb up there.
Good question.
But if they fall off the roof.
Great question. I'll answer that question with a story. Okay? We had a situation where similar thing. It was a tree that was broken. The tree needed to be cut, removed. The church, instead of hiring a professional company, someone who could handle the job, a volunteer came over and said, "Pastor, I got this. I can do this. I have some experience. You know, my uncle lets me cut their tree once in a while. I can do this for the church." All right, the guy goes up there. He falls. He becomes permanent injured. The church pays out millions of dollars because of that injury. Thank you. So that becomes a huge liability on the church by not going through the proper channels. I know from a very local church perspective, it's unrealistic at times, but the ideal scenario is when you have a situation where you need professional work done, from an insurance and liability standpoint, always hire a professional company that is insured. That's the recommendation. I had one hand here, then we go to you. Yeah, I do touch on like liability and protection elements at the church setting. Let me understand a little bit better. What's your role at the school? Or
well, at the church, right now we provide attempt to provide activities for the youth in our church and for outreach into the community. So right now we have like a volleyball program that comes play on Sunday nights where it's like an open volleyball time. They come to our church school, you know, set up the nets, people play volleyball, we have a prayer time and this kind of thing, but it's open to whoever wants to come in to the church school and participate. And so, you know, you're open to injuries.
No, yeah, at that point.
You know, and right now, you know, it's church of board approved activity for our church, but I'm thinking to reach out even more to the community than what we have with that.
We're going to talk about that for sure, because it comes down to church, school safety. Like, are we doing everything that we need to do to provide a safe environment for the outside kids to come in and play, even the inside kids, when it comes to the physical aspects of a building. So are the building in good condition? And we have a slide for that, and I want to show you a few pictures too. So just hanging there, we're going to go over that in a little bit.
You mentioned you paid out millions of dollars in that last story.
Uh-huh.
Was that voluntarily, or was that as a result of a lawsuit?
A lawsuit. Lawsuit. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was a settlement or if it was a reward from a lawsuit. It could have been a settlement even before it got to the jury. So I'm not sure on the details, but I know it involved a lot of money, and the lesson was clear that by having, it's really hard when you take it to your personal life. Like I see my personal church back home in Maryland. We use companies, like people from our church, they own and operate a company. So, and they come and say, "Pastor, I'm going to volunteer my services to the church." And how do you cross the line between, you have to make sure, if you're a safety officer, you have to ask the proper questions. You have to say, "Oh, are you licensed and bonded? Do you have insurance?" So that's where that conversation starts. But we have to be proactive in asking the right questions. Even if it's a volunteer within the church who wants to help, asking the right questions makes a huge difference. Not only to protect the volunteer, but to protect the organization as well.
So in order to have a volunteer, then do they have to be insured?
Well, it depends. Not necessarily. No, let's say you're having a volunteer for safety, for Sabbath school. The volunteer is helping as an assistant teacher for Sabbath school, right? I mean, we have volunteers like that. Or
any kind of maintenance around the church where, there might be a possible risk.
On like, for example, like roofing jobs or electrical jobs, plumbing jobs. Those are high risk, a little more complex types of scenarios. That's when you start asking the questions. I guess it comes down to how much of a risk are we talking about? And then if you're looking at roofing, let's take roofing for example. If you send a volunteer up in the roof that have no experience, you're exposing your church and the conference and the overall organization, the SDA organization, to a certain degree by placing someone that has no experience in a position that has a high risk. So that's when, right, and that's where you have to use a judgment call, because sometimes that person has 30 years of experience in roofing jobs, and they run a business that have insurance license, and they have a very well structured business for roofing. So you have to analyze the situation and make the best decision. But yeah, did that answer the question a little bit, more so, more or less? All right. So we have a lot to talk about. So when it comes to safety officers, it's hard to do this by ourselves. If you're at a church and you need to implement those things that we're talking about and that we will talk about, you're going to need leadership participation. So you have somehow to get a hold of your pastor and understand and show the pastor the importance of risk management. And you have to set practical goals, create some accountability with the church and with your team as the safety team of your church. And you have to understand the why, the what, and the who of this process of implementing prevention strategies to your church level. All right, so we're going to go into that in a bit. So the risk management committees, who should be part of that? This is a bit complicated, but I don't want this to seem as complicated. We're looking at a small team of people that can step up and help with this brainstorming of ideas on how to make our churches safer. So you're going to create a timeline of measurable goals, And then some of the items on the agenda are the 15 passenger vans, the emergency planning, the inspections and follow-up. We're going to talk about the inspections and follow-up in a little bit, but that involves going around your building, your church building, and identifying the potential hazards. I have a bunch of pictures that I want to show you on how you do that and some simple ways to do that. So the safety committee, you meet, you brainstorm, you come up with ideas, measurable goals, and then you start, and those people, they can be part of your safety committee, and they should be part of your safety committee so that when you start implementing your initiatives, your strategies, implementing will be a lot easier because you have leadership support. Safety officer. What is the responsibility of a safety officer? We have actually come up with a full job description in our website for a safety officer. But sometimes I feel like that's a overburden on people. But sometimes people really want to take on that job of being a safety officer. And what the main tasks of and duties of a safety officer is you're going to analyze, for example, the incident response. You have an accident at the church. Elderly lady comes in, trips and falls, and you have an accident. At that point, the safety officer is responsible to document that. Just have a form filled out to show, asking the proper questions, making sure you understand, you have the person's name, phone number, what the date of the accident, what happened, and the description of the accident. So, that's what the safety officer does. The self-inspection evaluation, we're going to get to that in a little bit, and should be on the board. Safety education is spearhead of the safety committee. So the safety officer is the leader, the person that leads the conversation. The safety committee meetings. So you meet on a regular basis, you record meeting minutes, you formulate an emergency plan. So that's huge nowadays. We talk about active shooter situations, we talk about fire emergencies. What are the emergency plans for your church? Formulate a facility inspection program. That's not complicated. It may sound complicated, but you just we have an inspection form. I'm going to show you in a minute that you can go around your building and checking boxes showing what is a potential problem, what is not a potential problem. And you bring that to your leadership, to your board for changes. All right. Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Proverbs 11:14. Any questions so far? Because we're going to get to the fun part in a little bit. So the 15 passenger vans. How many of you have heard of this? The speech from the conference or the risk management talking about not to use 15 passenger vans. So this has been voted by the NAD, North American Division, and this is the wording on the working policy. 15 passenger van use. In the interest of safety, denominational organizations shall not purchase, lease, rent, or use 15 passenger vans or modified 15 passenger vans for sponsored activities under any circumstance. Alternatives to 15 passenger vans include minivans, SUVs, mini school buses, 15 passenger buses with dual rear wheels. We have enough data to tell you that those vans are extremely dangerous for our organization. We have paid out a lot, millions of money, of dollars because of claims that arose out of the use of 15 passenger vans. Not to mention the lives that we have lost because that of the 15 passenger vans. And it was within the church, within our group, that we've lost lives and had some significant damages because of 15.
It was the vehicle's fault?
Yes. Yes, the 15 passenger vans, and it's a good point, because the GMs and the Fords, they have a 12 and they have a 15 passenger van. Sometimes they take what a manufactured 15 passenger van, they take the last seat out and call it a 12 passenger van. But that doesn't fix the problem. The problem is a vehicle manufacturing problem when it comes to the wheelbase. The wheelbase ratio compared to the vehicle length is unstable. So the rollover probability is a lot higher than other vehicles. That's where the problem lies. So it's a vehicle problem. So stay away from those. And we've been preaching this message for a few years now. And finally, the NED have voted to put that word shall not, because before it was only a recommendation. Now it's a shall not, which kind of makes a statement. So, right here, the numbers. So 653 occupants were killed, an average of 65 per year. And that's only for 15 passenger vans. 44% were ejected, 58% were in rollover crashes. I personally have driven a 15 passenger van full of books. It was just me, passenger, full of books behind us. Very heavy load. I was driving from Maryland to Massachusetts. I felt how unstable that, and I had no knowledge of this. No knowledge. I never thought I would be working for ARM. And I felt it was hard to control the vehicle. So when I started preaching this, I'm like, wow, I remember talking to my friend. You see, it's hard to make a turn here. Question.
I was a specked out. I own a 15 passenger van. I've hauled lumber from here to Texas with it.
Uh-huh.
I've hauled people. I've hauled other things. But they can be specked out differently, no different than a bus or truck or anything else. So it would depend on how it's specced. And this is the same attitude that we have towards guns. The guns are the killers instead of the people. And you're blaming the vehicle, but who specced out the vehicle? Because those vehicles specced out properly, I would argue, are any more unsafe than any other vehicle.
Right.
But it has to be specced out properly.
What do you mean by specced out?
In other words, it has to have the right, in this case, not rollover protection system, but they have sway bars set up, so you put on the front and the rear to deal with that very issue. And there's sizes and dimensions, and then there's also axle ratings for stiffness, suspension, et cetera, et cetera. And if you buy the cheapest thing, the cheapest GVW, you're not going to have those things.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I'd be curious to know, in this information, what was the specs of them? Were those the cheapies
that
didn't have any of this stuff on it? And that's what
happens to most of our churches across the entire division, is we get donations. People, because they are cheap and cheerful, not cheerful, but because they're cheap, they are donated to the churches, to Pathfinder groups. And we get them as donations, and we don't say no because it's a donation. So we end up not asking the right questions in most cases, and just using whatever we get. So they do show a greater risk than other vans because of the way they are built. And there's no way that we can go around checking for all the specs for all the vans. Not to mention that the National Vehicle Administrator, they put out an article on those vehicles, on the 15-passenger vans, because of their risk and their data, their probability, the rollover probability associated with those vehicles. So, All right, let's move forward. So managing drivers, as church leaders or in any leadership capacity, sometimes we have to select the drivers. And when we do that, we have to make sure they have good driving records, right? No at-fault accidents, less than 2 citations within the past 3 years. Must be 21 years or older to have a good reputation for safe driving habits, proper license and registration. And now I want to ask you a question. What is adequate insurance if driving their own vehicle? Let's say you have a parent who wants to drive their kids plus any other kid from the school or from the church on behalf of the church driving to an activity. Are you familiar with the proper adequate insurance requirement from NAD working policy? Nope. Any guesses as far as limits, insurance limits? Right. I mean, full coverage is a relative term. It comes down to the liability, to the third party liability. And that's where the 100, 300 comes in. Because full coverage.
So you're talking about liability, not
necessarily. No, not necessarily. And because the property damage is the last number on the 100, 300, and sometimes it's like 100, the last number. So the liability is actually the first and the second, the bodily injury and the underinsured motorist. So you're looking at having 100 and 300 as being the minimum to cover that first layer of liability insurance. Now we've had situations where that limit exhausts. Okay, so what happens after that? So you're driving a kid or whoever to an activity, and then you have a car accident. That car accident, let's say, happens to be 800,000 between all the stuff involved, medical bills, pain and suffering, all of that. So let's say you only have 300 on your insurance. So your insurance will respond and will exhaust that 300 first. What happens after that? Because you were driving on behalf of the organization, there is a potential that the church will be brought into the table when it comes to insurance, and we will pick up the excess of that. So the first 3 you covered, the last 5, the church's insurance would respond.
I mean, you have for that, Michigan is unique in their car insurance than any other state in the United States in the unlimited liability of accidents. My understanding is from.
I'm not sure of the local laws. Can anybody respond to that? There's a liability limit. Okay. Yes. Yeah, and as far as I know, I mean, a policy should have a limit because that's what you pay for. Like, I personally have my car limits are 100, 300, and I have an umbrella policy that I pay really cheap, but that picks up after my 300 all the way to a million. And I have a friend of mine who tells me, Leander, the days we live in right now, that's not even enough. All the way to a million. He said that he has an umbrella policy all the way to 3 million, because that's where he feels it's safe nowadays. So it's pretty crazy.
I personally, on mine, I have an umbrella policy pretty much for $1 million.
Yeah.
And it's about $150
each. That's what I pay too. It's very affordable. And I'll give you an example. If you get in a car accident where you are at fault and you end up, let's say you hit a motorcycle and the person driving that motorcycle was a breadwinner of a family, he was, let's say, an architect. How much an architect makes a year? Let's say 100 grand. Just guess it. 100 grand times how many years that family will be without his income. So you times that, that's where the attorney, the judge finds his number. So it's going to be a multi-million dollar claim that your insurance will have to pay. So if that is taken to court, I'm just giving you a scenario to your personal lives. But anyways, all right. So moving forward, when it comes to managing drivers, you have to manage the fatigue. So you're going on a long trip. You want to make sure that you have the drivers well rested, and you have a rotation of drivers if possible. And distractions, cell phones, eating, drinking. There's a bunch of videos online for text and driving. If you ever in a situation where you have to talk to young drivers, look those videos up and use them to really scare the teenagers. Because I feel like the young adults nowadays, and I include myself in that group, sometimes we feel like we can text and drive, but really we can't. It's really a reality. So maintenance of the vehicles, to make sure that you have a good upkeep program of the vehicle, and you maintain all the records of the relevant documents. We have a form online for a pre and post trip inspection. So if you go to our website, AdventistRisk.org, we have a bunch of resources, a bunch of forms that can help you with your ministry. And one of them is the pre and post trip inspection. Very useful. Oh, right there. It's pretty much checking the vehicle, tire pressure, fluid levels, belt and hoses, everything. You go around the vehicle, check marks. Helps you if you don't know much about vehicles, helps you to stay on track on what to look for. All right, so inspections. How many of you over the last couple months have heard that someone came to you to your church to do an inspection? Can anybody relate to that? You have somebody coming to your church? A fire marshal? Okay, that's good. That's recommended, but that's not exactly what I'm referring to. We have partnered with a company called Verisk. Verisk is also known as ISO, which is the standard, industry standard for property evaluation and insurance rates. And they are coming to our churches and doing a property evaluation. Why is that important? It's important because we want to make sure that our buildings are properly insured. And we have a good understanding of where we are from a property insurance standpoint. Okay? And that's what this is. We want to make sure that the ISO forms have recommendations. So the church board will review outstanding recommendations. Not only the ISO, if you have not received or seen an ISO form, you can also do a self-inspection, which follows the same pattern as the previous form, but for the building. You have all the questions right there. You just go, I'll walk around the building and complete. I think I have a picture of that. Oh, no. Let's see. Next slide. Yeah, right here. That's what the self-inspection looks like. You just walk around the building and you just check. Just to make sure your building is in good condition. Now, so conduct at least one premises inspection and report to local church board.
Some people hear that they have been done. Once you start talking about it, it's been done in our church.
Uh-huh.
You may not realize it's been done. Because sometimes they'll contact the pastor, contact the head deacon.
Correct.
And they've met with the head deacon and gone to
That's
the
right.
church. And you might not even be aware of it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, who out of those ISO inspections happen?
How do they happen?
Yeah.
A person comes to your location, to your property, and he or she goes inside the property and outside.
How does
How does it happen? Do I call them? Do they come on their own?
Oh, I see. Okay. Initially, between myself and the conference, I have requested the conference a list of contact information. So the conference gave me maybe the pastor's name or maybe the elder's name, or if the conference knew the safety officer's phone number and name, that's where I got that information from. And then the company calls that person, set up the appointment, and gets it done. So you don't see, that's a good point. And sometimes that happens. Well, you get the ISO report or even any other report, and you may find yourself just like that thinking, what is that accurate? Should we use that number or should we not use that number? So that's where you have to go back to your board, analyze, and maybe if you want to get a second opinion, that's not a problem. You should make sure that your building is accurately, properly insured at a exact and fair value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we've had a situations where the property was underinsured and not enough money was paid out because it was a complicated situation, but between the insurance company and the insured, we just didn't do a good job in making sure the buildings are in proper values, having the proper values in place. So that's where this report comes in very handy, because the ISO is a very well-known, reputable company that gives us a very accurate idea of where our buildings should be. We also voted to have an audit checklist, which means we're trying to make our churches accountable by answering the question if they have a safety officer, if they have completed a self-inspection. That way we're trying to keep all of our churches accountable to keep up the safety of our buildings. So you should be seeing that maybe in the audit checklist, or maybe the auditor will ask you those questions. All right. So if you see a no on the evaluation, that means you have a potential problem. That's in reference to the self-inspection form. All right. Now it's the fun part. What's wrong with this picture? There you go. All right, it expired. Good, that was easy. So some protection elements at the church. You have fire extinguishers, sprinkler systems, smoke heat detectors, fire alarm systems, security systems, and lighting. Those are all protection elements that we should be looking for when we think of safety for our churches and schools. Very good. That's the way it should be. Yeah. Very good. Flammable storage. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Oh, I already gave it away. So this is what caused a lot of trips and falls. But that's where most of our liability claims come from. Unleveled sidewalks. Yeah. And that's a potential hazard. Yeah. If someone falls and gets hurt, that person can claim it's the Michigan Conference's fault or the Great Lakes Academy's fault for not fixing the sidewalk. So, yeah. So, life safety. Safety in the sanctuary. So, exit doors unlocked. How many of you have churches that have stuff in front of the exit doors? I hope not many. But that's the case in some of our churches, and we need to stay away from that, because in an emergency situation, think about hundreds of people running for their lives. Try to exit the building, and there is something blocking them from doing that. So that's, yes, sir.
Another thing is included on that, the electrical box is 36 inches all the way around.
The exit signs? Hmm. The electrical box.
Cutting the power off if you have an electrical box.
Hmm.
That's state law, but they still stack it. I go through this all the time.
Very good. So yeah, proper lighting, having the exit signage, door hardware. Sometimes I have seen, for whatever reason, doors swinging in when they should have been swinging out. So making sure your doors comply with that as well. Now posting the signage is also recommended. Now what's wrong? What's wrong with this picture? Huh?
Dark?
Lights? I mean, I can see some light in there.
No, I mean, there's a big light shining in.
Okay.
And one outside the building.
Now, lighting, alright. I'm going to say this can be both right and wrong. Because if the exit is not to that side, and this one doesn't have the arrow, so that could be right or that could be wrong depending on where the door is. Yeah. But those were good comments. Now, many times we get the churches receive donations, and we have to be looking closely to those donations to make sure that we're not, just because it was donated, that we're not paying attention to conditions, to the condition of the donation. So we have to make sure, especially in the mother's room, that you don't have those falling apart cribs. So those are good protections for the outlets. And in the mother's room, electrical outlets capped, the GFCI near sinks, change tables, cribs, furnishing, chemicals, small objects. Those are things to look for in the mother's room. Now this is big because we have had claims where the pastor would hold the mic that was wired. So that caused him to be electrocuted. Yes, thank you. So, do not use wired microphones. So, yeah, that's that. And think about it. I have seen, and I remember seeing pastors doing that. You know, they just have the mics, and then they get, usually the mic is on a stand, right? And then the pastors get excited because they just had a baptism, and they get excited, and they grab the mic. And then at that point, that's complicated. I don't know the science behind that or at what point you get electrocuted, but it's pretty dangerous. Yeah, and you can pretty much die. Yeah, so. So non-slip materials on the stairs, because we've had claims of people falling, going up and down the stairs of the baptism tank. Railings, overflow, draining your baptism tank. We have had drowning claims because no one drained the tank. Kids were playing after services, and you know how kids are. They fell on the tank and they drowned. It was one kid who drowned. Nobody was there, and unfortunately we lost a life because we forgot to drain the tank. So, use of candles. Can we use candles? Can we not use candles in church or schools? My friend there says no. Right. And we do that. And it's very sad. I remember, like, not so long ago in my previous church, we did the candle ceremony, like, na, 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 let your candle shine, na, 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 you know that music? na 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 na, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. And we would hold a candle around the church, which was carpet. And I can still remember, as if it was today, I wasn't working for ARM at that time, so I couldn't really, I didn't have the mindset. But it's so dangerous, especially because you have kids holding candles. Candles should be just prohibited from use. And there are some alternatives. You have the battery-operated candles that look just as good as the real ones. And you can prevent a huge problem and potentially save lives by not using those candles. Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. Any comments or anyone want to share personal experience?
So the Pathfinder candle lighting, can't do that anymore.
Inside the building?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the record.
It's monitored. If you're not sitting there holding candles, you know, for hours.
If that table ever got knocked over.
Yeah.
I get scared every time we do it.
Maybe
we should have a fire extinguisher.
We do.
Yeah. That the recommendation, if you're gonna have candles at church for a particular ceremony, it have to be a candelabras, and stay put. They cannot be moved. Now, here's my recommendation. If you really want to use candles for a ceremony, call the fire marshals. Call them and said, should we do this? Can we do this? What would you recommend? And if so, if we do this, just be on call. You know, just be ready to come in. Yeah, they're going to say no, most likely. But you had a question.
This may sound like a dumb question, but is your concern that the wax dripping down is going to catch the carpet on fire, or is it going to drop the lit candle and catch the carpet on fire?
I think it's, someone can help me, but I think it's the candle, the actual candle that can burn.
Has anybody ever got their hair caught? Have you seen anybody with their hair?
Yeah, that's true.
Has it ever happened?
I don't know. Honestly, I'm sure.
Did you know that there's fire in the carpet, built the carpet? Have you ever tried to start carpet on fire with a candle?
Uh-huh.
A little common sense here. If you ever tried to do it, try to burn carpet sometime out in the fire. It don't burn very good.
Okay.
It'll melt a little bit, but it don't burn because it's full of fire.
So would you rather take the chance and or use it, just avoid the risk by using a battery operated? That's the point. I'm not saying it's gonna burn. I'm saying if you can avoid the risk, why take it?
Why live?
Yeah.
The
conference doesn't have any stipulations on that.
Those are codes. As far as I know, the conference may or may not have an internal policy on candles. You have to check with the conference. I know some local laws are very strict when it comes to use of candles in houses of worship. So my recommendation is calling your local fire marshal and asking them, are we allowed to use candles in houses of worship? ARM's recommendation is, if you can avoid it, don't use it, because you can prevent someone from getting injured or potentially, you know, burning your building to the ground, depending on the situation. Right. No. If that's a good question. If you have one person holding a candle and you have a supervisor with a fire extinguisher ready to help out, I don't see a problem. I mean, you're gonna be right there, catch it on fire, get it over with. That's correct. The time that my church used, we did a circle around the entire church. It was a big church. And we did a very big circle. Every single person had a candle in their hands. And we were just doing, like you said, just lighting each other's candle.
I'm pretty sure I remember a case where a candle lit the hair of a girl in front of, this other person.
Uh-huh.
In other words, they kids are moving around.
Yeah.
And now, I don't think there was major damage in that case, but if it was being battery operated, then
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, yeah, the kids, they run around. If some hair catches on fire, who's liable? Who is liable? Who organized the activity? Who did? The church did. So if a kid kid's hair catches on fire, we are most likely liable for the damages of that. And what if that fire actually becomes a permanent injury to that person? And there's a lot when it comes to liability and permanent injuries, especially when it comes to the cosmetics, like the damaging the permanent looks of a person. That becomes a huge liability claim. What's wrong with this picture? Yeah. But don't we do this all the time as a church? Not even as a church, on a personal level, I can say, I mean, I have put myself, and I'm guilty of that, some leftover paint in my furnace room. I'm guilty of that. Who haven't? So, this is not, by law, we should have at least 3 feet of clearance radius around the furnace. So, that's the recommendation. What's wrong with this one? You got some... You're laughing because it's going to be your church that looks like this, right? So anyways, you have a lot of metals here right near the electrical panels. So that should not be there. So let's see. So using signage for when you're cleaning the bathroom or cleaning the hallways, signage can prevent a potential trip and or slips and falls claim. Are you ready? The great aim of education is not knowledge but action. My goal with this presentation for you is just to create a mindset for safety. A lot of this you will forget. I hope not, but statistics shows that not the absorption rate of a presentation is not very high. But here's something I want you to remember. Just think about safety in whatever capacity you are in. Whether you are a Sabbath school teacher or a safety officer or a teacher or anything you do. You walk into a room, think about safety. Or you go to a place, think about safety. And putting the knowledge to action. So we have, just want to show you a few more things we have. Let me see how many. Okay, so we talk about claims in a bit. We have this form called Accident Incident Report, which helps you to, I think we've talked about this, if you have an accident, you want to report or have some sort of documentation describing the accident. This is the form that you can use. This is available on our website. It's easy to fill out and keeps your accidents documented, and it's very easy to fill out. Now, what about filing a claim? We've talked about the property side of things and how it works. An adjuster gets assigned, goes to your property, sends us a report, and we'll process the payment. But what about a liability claim? So, filing a claim is very easy. You have to get the form. The form you can get online or you can get it through your conference. You can go to our website and get the forms online for liability or for an injury. All the forms are available online. Yeah. What, the phone number? Alright, so the phone number, the 24/7 hotline, I'm going to do an advertising voice, 888-951-4276, and you press 2 for the claims department. Alright, so the emergency planning. As a safety officer, as a safety person, you want to look at the emergency planning. So active shooters, fire, emergency, and what do you do in an emergency situation? So we have our resources. We have monthly resources, actually weekly resources that you can sign up for. And we had our safety Sabbath in March. Do you remember the safety Sabbath communications? Yes. We try to do this as a beginning of a relationship with each local church to host an emergency drill at a church, at a local church. What did that look like? We tried to do an active shooter drill on a church, which means educating our congregation as to how to respond to an active shooter situation. If any of us are found in an active shooter situation, we are most likely to be in shock and not know what to do. So the goal here is to start with baby steps, teaching and communicating and showing our churches and schools what to do in a situation such as fire or an active shooter situation. We provided enough resources, and we have enough resources available to show you how to implement an active shooter situation. And not only that, but you can also invite your local police officers, your local police department, and they will be welcome. Most of them, from what I have seen so far, are more than willing to come to your church to do a training and to give you some guidance as to how to run a fire emergency or an active shooter situation. And I have a video to show the basics of an active shooter situation and what to do. But there's a lot more to the video that we can research and implement.
Seems like the conference ought to have some trained individuals go around to the churches and train each church.
No, I agree that could be something beneficial. Yeah.
Where are you from? Grand Rapids area, Wyoming. Okay. I can tell you. That's
good.
Great, but that seems like that every church should have that. Well, I kept looking for those videos that we were talking about, because you never figure out how to get them.
Which ones? The?
Well, any of them, the fire drill, you know, all of them. You said videos, but then nothing. But yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Good. And there are a bunch of courses online. I personally did a course on active shooter. It was a $25 course online called ALICE. ALICE. You just look up ALICE active shooter training, and it's amazing what you can learn for only $25. It gives you a lot of resources, videos on how to do, what's your initial response. Basically, it follows the concept of the video that I'm about to show you. So,
the FEMA website has one.
FEMA, yes. I think FEMA has the same video that I'm going to show you. So I think, I'm not sure, but... So, yeah, let me get... So that's the video, the run, hide, and fight surviving inactive shooter. Yeah, that's the video, right? Yeah. The course I gave you, the Alice course breaks it down in details, and it's a two, three hour course. Very good. I definitely recommend it. And you can actually give it to your church to listen and to hear and to understand what to do. So holding your safety drill, we have a lot of resources under safetysabbath.org. So coming back to your question when you asked about what resources are available so that we know what to do and where, how do we get there? So a lot of resources are available under this website that I recommend taking note of, safetysabbath.org. So quickly, last slides are the maintenance. The most frequent property claims received at ARM is water damage. So this is a preventable claim. Preventable. The most common casualty claim received at ARM is, you guess.
False.
Yeah? Everyone agree? That's correct. Slips and fall injuries. Yeah, that's the most common. So working closely with whoever is responsible for the care and upkeep of your church and school. Seasonal maintenance. There's different parts of the building that needs different care depending on the season that you're in. So having that also makes a difference in the property aspect of your building. And we have forms also available on our website that helps you for each season to ask the right questions. So you don't have to know everything about buildings. You just use the available resources that will assist you in identifying the potential problems. And then things to avoid. This is an important slide, and this is the last one. Attempting to place the blame on an individual. So let's say you personally get in a car accident. Don't give or take the blame of a car accident. I'll give you an example. One time, this lady was in a car accident. After the accident, she was in shock because of she didn't know much what was going on. Her brain was in shock, and she kept saying, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It was my fault. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." She was not at fault. But at the end, when they went to court, the guy, the other party, used that against her, and he or her, whoever, that party won the case because the lady was apologizing and taking the blame for something that she didn't have the blame on. Very good. Thanks for sharing. So things to avoid. Attempting to take the place of the administration in corrective action. So for me, this comes down to working with your administration in whatever capacity or whatever situation that you have going on. If you see a questionable situation, call your conference. Let them know what's going on. This will create a backup on you, for you, and the conference can be proactive and create and pursue whatever action that needs to be take place. Release of information of any unauthorized parties. So things to avoid. Questions or comments? Thank you so much, you guys, for your time. I hope this was beneficial or helpful to you. So again, the goal is to create a mindset of safety when we get to our churches and schools. And now, if you have any questions, we can. I do have. Let me get that. So I have my business cards right here. If any of you need, I'm going to walk around. You can send me an email. I can send you the presentation. Oops, sorry. All right, let me get you one more. I got more here. So any other comments or comments, personal experience that you want to share with the group? I'll leave some more on the table if anybody else needs a card. You take one? Yeah?
I was told that you guys don't insure for armed people within the church.
Right, so that we did a presentation on Tuesday. It was only about armed security at church. So I don't want.
Our church is looking at going to a different insurance company
for that.
Because they apparently provide the same level of service that ARM does, but also this other component.
Yeah, our policy right now excludes firearms. So, and honestly, across the insurance industry, it's not very many companies out there. In fact, I don't know of any personally at this moment that provides both the general liability aspect with armed security. What you have sometimes is a specific company that does specific insurance for armed security.
So
that we have. That it would be a separate policy just for armed security. Everything under the policy. Yeah, now the question there is about the insurance limits. Because sometimes the insurance limits are, even though the general liability may say $1 million or 2 to 3 million, they have a sub-limit of 100, 200,000, depending on what coverage. You can count on me.
Okay.
You can send me whatever questions you have, and I can compare the policies for you. I can show you what's good on this outside policy, and I promise to be as honest as I can and transparent, showing you what's good and what's bad, and what's good and what's bad on our policy in comparison. Yeah. It's hard for somebody who doesn't do insurance on a regular basis. There's a lot, even myself, I've been doing this job for 3 years, and when I have to analyze policies like this, and I've done it a few times, I encounter things new and the new terminology. It's just the ongoing changing industry. Who insures us? We do. We underwrite the policies for... We underwrite. We are an insurance company that we underwrite the policies for general liability and property and auto insurance. There is something called reinsurance. Reinsurance is the insurance for the insurance company. So let's say, I don't want to get too technical, but up to $1 million, we pay out of pocket. Anything beyond $1 million comes from reinsurance. So, and that's the way we manage to operate the business of insurance. So we have coverage, the church have coverage all the way to $100 million. Yes. Yes. So the conferences and the union, they pay for the excess policies. Just like you and I have umbrella policies, the church have what we call the excess policies, the master policy that covers beyond that first layer of 1 million all the way to 100 million. Any other questions, comments? Yeah, I'm sorry, I had a question, my bad. What happens in most cases is before we actually get to a lawsuit, the attorneys get involved, the attorney from the other party, and they settle. Well, right. So before a claim gets to become a lawsuit, there's a settlement in place. So a lot of claims that could potentially be a lawsuit, they get settled before it becomes a lawsuit. So I don't know how many claims turn into lawsuits. I don't know that answer. But I do know that our attorneys work really hard not to become a lawsuit and be taken to jury, because that it's a gamble. Like, we never know what to expect. It can go up to the depending on the claim, it can go up to the millions if the jury makes a decision in whatever direction. So the attorneys try to settle the claim before it's taken into a judge.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.